Hey everyone, I'm Andrea Ferretti and this is Yogaland. Today my guest is Maryam Sharif-Zadeh. Maryam is a yoga teacher and the founder and CEO of Office Yoga, a company based in San Francisco. She is also a lover of the water and tells an amazing story about how she was the first woman to swim. I think she's the first and only woman to swim the 22 miles around the San Francisco Bay. So for those of you who are familiar, she started out in Daly City and ended up in Brisbane, where Candlestick Park used to be. So stay tuned for that story. It's a great example of her determination and laser-like focus. But that's not the focus of today's interview. Today, we focus on Office Yoga, which is a company she started in 2014 and is now number one workplace yoga program in the nation. She has served over 300 companies with Office Yoga and trained over 50 instructors worldwide. And if you're interested in teaching in a corporate setting, I would highly consider one of her trainings. She has just put in the hours and understands from top to bottom how to approach the workplace setting and bring yoga in so that it's effective for the people and supports them in their work and in their lives. So we talk all things office yoga. We talk sequencing, what to wear, how to approach things. She's so passionate about this topic. She made me feel passionate about it, and I know you will enjoy and learn from the interview. I will put links to all of her info on the show notes page, which is yogalandpodcast.com/episode323. And just two quick reminders, Jason and I will be teaching at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. For the Yoga Reaches Out event. All proceeds benefit Boston Children's Hospital. You can go to www.yogareachesout.org to join our team, which is Yogaland, or to create your own team or to donate. And there is one more week before Jason, a little bit less than a week before Jason starts his live calls for his injury management online course. So there's still a little bit more time to register. I'm closing the registration at the end of this week. You can go to learn.jasonyoga.com/injuries to get all the details and to sign up. Okay, enjoy the interview with Maryam. Hi, Maryam. It's so, so nice to have you. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you. I'm a big fan. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, thank you. For having me. We're going to get into all things office and workplace yoga. You are the expert. But I wanted to first talk about how you were the first woman in history to swim around the San Francisco Bay.
Oh, you found that?
I found it. I always love to do a little digging.
Yeah.
And you also swam across Lake Tahoe. How far is that? How far would Lake Tahoe be?
Lake Tahoe is 12 miles, but it's an elevation and it's fresh water. So it's a different animal than the San Francisco swim.
Right. And yeah. The San Francisco swim would have been so cold. There is no time of year when that water is warm.
It was freezing. It was 54 degrees when I jumped in. And I jumped right into an eddy, which we didn't know. So I was swimming in place for the first 2 hours.
Are you kidding me?
No. And thank God I didn't know. It was dark out and it was right at the Daly City County line. So I can't see anything. You know, it's like Ocean Beach, that long stretch of Ocean Beach. So everything looks the same. And I'm, you know, half a mile offshore. So I'm just looking at ocean and beach. So I think I'm making progress and I'm just swimming in place. Freezing.
Were you swimming alone or were you with like a group or how'd you do it?
I was the only swimmer, but I had a support crew. So there was a boat next to me and then I had a kayaker that I was following and they all knew I was swimming in place, but they also know that the mental state of a swimmer is very fragile. So you only tell them what they need to know and keep being supportive. And they did exactly that.
Oh my gosh. So once you got out of the eddy, what did the total time take to do it?
The total time... So I was planning for around six and a half hours. And the total time ended up being like a little over 9 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I was like running out of food, you know, feeds. My crew was exhausted.
And you said you were in the dark at first. So you start, did you start it like early morning or?
Yeah. Yeah. We had planned it out so that I would hit the Golden Gate Bridge right when the flood started. So the water would kind of push me in.
Yeah.
But because I had swam in place for 2 hours, we had missed the tides. And so instead of catching the flood at its strongest point, I was basically chasing the flood, making sure I didn't get caught when the ebb, you know, when the tides turned and I was stuck swimming upstream again. So.
Oh my gosh. I did not know there was going to be that wrinkle in the story. Wow. So yeah. How did it feel to accomplish that? Like right in the moment, how did it feel? Did you feel awful or did you feel amazing when you came out of the water?
I was kind of pissed at the end because I was tired and my crew wasn't telling me where the end point was. Usually swims, you'll have a start point and an end point, like swim to that beach and then go to the beach. But from here, I swam from Daly City to Brisbane. It was a county line, which you can't see in the water. And so they wanted to make sure that I cleared it so it was official. So they had me just keep swimming and swimming like over past Hunter's Point. I was basically a SFO. Oh, and like basically swam to SFO.
Glamorous parts of the water either.
So gross. And it was like salty. And so I was really ready to be done. But afterwards, I just had no idea like what was going on. My brain was like scrambled eggs. And I was very grateful that I finished it because I really didn't think I was going to finish.
That's amazing that you finished. What prompted you to decide to do it and like create the whole team and everything? How do people do this?
Yeah. Well, I started open water swimming actually because my childhood sister had passed away in a plane crash in 2018. Yeah, thank you. It was really sad and it was sudden. You know, it was all over the news. And so it was hard to, you know, see that, you know, and kind of find out details from the news as we were talking about. And so I used open water swimming as a way to just process my grief. You know, there wasn't enough yoga in the world that was going to help me with this. And so swimming is yoga in the water. And so I took it to the ocean and I started swimming and she loved Lake Tahoe. That was her favorite place on earth.
Oh.
So I made a vow to swim across Lake Tahoe. And I raised money for a nonprofit, No Kid Hungry, that she worked with. And that was my way of honoring her and, you know, just keeping her alive in the ways that I could. So.
Wow. That makes total sense. That would be a motivate, you know, that, that drive to come from somewhere. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely, I was processing a lot and I feel good about it. You know, she's in my heart still and I've kind of went through that. So that's how I kind of went down the open water swimming rabbit hole.
Yeah. And you were a water player polo at college. So you had that sports background.
Yeah.
I also found it really interesting that, you know, when you graduated, you started, I love how people's lives like fit together when you look back. So when you graduated, you were hired to lead a faculty and staff wellness program at Cal. Mm-hmm. So when did the yoga fit in for you? When did you start doing yoga?
I started doing yoga in college. Just, you know, I was teaching swim lessons during the summer. And then while I had a break, you know, I would take the classes. I got to take them for free because I was a teacher. And there was a teacher I really loved, Alexia Cervantes. If you're listening, thank you so much. And I started doing yoga with her. It was like a yoga Pilates blend. And I wasn't that into it. You know, I was 22 and I wanted to move. I wanted to be active. And as my career grew, I moved to San Francisco. I got a little bit more involved in yoga. It's just a little bit more prevalent here in the city. And that's how I ended up bringing yoga into the workplace was because I was doing a lot of workplace wellness. And the program I led for faculty and staff at Cal was more strength training based.
Mm-hmm.
So it required a lot of equipment and it required a lot of tools and space. And I was inspired to take this outside of the walls of UC Berkeley, but my experience with yoga was that it's so simple. You know, yoga is so simple. It doesn't need a lot. You don't even need mats, honestly, anymore. We have a desk yoga format that we do, but yoga was so simple. And it also got the mental benefits, you know, the mental health benefits, the meditation practices, the philosophy. So, you know, I thought if I had to start with one thing, I wanted it to be that, because it really encapsulates so much of our well-being.
Yeah. So you founded Office Yoga in 2014. So that's 10 years of a small business running. Congratulations. That's a huge accomplishment.
Thank you.
And now I just want people to know you serve over 300 companies and you have 50 instructors worldwide. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. So why don't we back up? Like, why don't we back way, way up and talk about what workplace wellness means? Like, what, mm-hmm. why is that important?
That's a really good question. I'm going to back up one more step farther and just give everyone, our audience, an overview of business, because, you know, doing corporate yoga is very different than going into it and teaching in a studio or at a gym or privates.
Right.
So, you know, about 50 years ago, Milton Friedman, the economist, defined business as their social responsibility was to, you know, make profit and, you know, stay within the boundaries of the law. Like, that's their primary focus, is to make money. Mm-hmm. And that's what businesses did. You know, they made money and that was their primary responsibility. And that's all they focused on. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? A business needs to make money in order to survive. But the problem is, it's very one-dimensional. It's like telling a yogi that their primary responsibility is to be good at asana, mm-hmm. you know, and that's it. Like, you just have to be really good at asana and then you're a yogi. And, you know, as yoga teachers, we know there's so much more than, you know, just asana. When we practice, there's meditation, there's karma yoga, there's philosophy. It's multidimensional. And so I think business leaders started to realize, you know, about 20 years ago, like, you know, profits are important, but we need to really look at our environmental impact. We need to look at how we give back to the community. We need to look at how we treat employers, you know, and employees. Mm-hmm. So that's when the rise of workplace wellness and conscious business really started. Fred Kaufman is an author, and he wrote Conscious Business in 2006. B Lab, which is the B Corp certification board, they started in 2007. Okay. Conscious Capitalism started in 2010. You know, Office Yoga started in 2014. Mm-hmm. Conscious Business Magazine started in 2014. So around that time, all of these mindful businesses and practices and movements started to come up. Mm-hmm. I really think that the rise of the pandemic actually, you know, catapulted that movement forward, because employers realized that employee health was really valuable. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's more prevalent now. Like, office yoga is almost normal. It's more normalized in workplaces now than it's ever been before.
Right.
But the problem that I still see is that in 200-hour and 500-hour trainings, it's not discussed. You know, it's not something that we really learn. We have trainings for prenatal yoga or postnatal yoga. We have kids yoga or trauma-informed yoga, but there's no office yoga or corporate yoga trainings or practices. Right. And that's why I really wanted to talk to you, Andrea, because I think as a community, we really need to start talking about this and talk about best practices and start bringing it to the table. So
I think I think that was great, you know, context. And I think potentially people might feel a little intimidated by office or corporate yoga, and like, with good reason. Like, there are different sort of protocols to keep in mind, and different, there's just so different ways that different offices function. And there's always, like, no matter what, there's going to be inner office dynamics as well that you probably wouldn't notice or even have as in a public class. I'm just kind of like giggling to myself thinking about Yoga Journal, you know, because we had office yoga, and that was a great office yoga environment because we all did yoga and we were all like writing and thinking and about yoga and passionate about yoga all day long. But even in that setting, I think it was, could be an intimidating, difficult setting for yoga teachers to come into. I guess I'm definitely curious as to what it was like for you in the very beginning and what some of your early experiences were like versus, and what you learned from them going into office environments.
I will say that I've made every single mistake that you can make. And for better or worse, I am resilient. It's hard to really embarrass me.
That's good. So that's a really good quality, actually. I struggle with that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to embarrass me. And I think that's why I'm still here. You know, I'm just learning, you know, we talk about imposter syndrome, and to me, that's just the process of learning. You don't know everything. No one does. We're learning. That's what
right.
it is.
Right.
But you know, I actually started with my first corporate client in 2011, and I had them for 2 years while I was working at Cal and had a million other jobs. So I was really lucky, and I had a really good, you know, they were a small tech company. We did the yoga flow style class, and, you know, there was just a good culture and a good environment for me to start. And as I started to maybe build on that a little bit, I was starting to leave my work at Cal and I wanted to do something different, but I didn't know what it was. I just asked that client, you know, hey, do you guys want to go twice a week? And so they're like, of course, we love you. So we started teaching there twice a week. And then I just walked up and down the office, the office building, and I started knocking on doors. I was like, hey, I teach yoga on the third floor. Do you guys want some too? And I got my second client that way.
That's great. Yeah.
apparently that's called soliciting, because eventually I got escorted out of the building.
Oh my gosh, that's really funny.
So, because Karen in HR was really angry that a yoga teacher was knocking on their door.
You're like peddling yoga, walking door to door like a peddler peddling.
Yeah. I was just so excited. I really believe, I still believe that, you know, there's a lot of benefit to having yoga practices and meditation in the workplace. So
right.
It was hard. I was excited, you know, and I thought I had something great to offer.
I mean, that's the best kind of salesperson. You were genuine. Yeah. So that's how you started.
That's how I started.
That is really adorable and amazing and not what I was expecting.
Yeah, I didn't have a name at first. And I was talking to another friend. He has a PT business and I work with him a lot just on making sure that our sequences are sound. And he is a really great entrepreneur and business person. And I was telling him about my idea and he thought it was brilliant and I didn't know what to call it. And I remember talking to my therapist at the time. I was like, what do I call it? You know, office on the go yoga, you know, it was like all these weird names. And she's like, what do you just call it? Office yoga. And I was like, yeah, that's not a bad idea.
It's just so clear.
Yeah, it's so clear. And so that, you know, I went home and made some business cards and eventually got the domain. I bought it from someone in Denmark, which that was a whole process.
Yeah.
But, you know, I started slowly putting the pieces together. It definitely didn't happen overnight.
Yeah. So what would you say after all these years of experience and having made the mistakes, what are some major differences for people to keep in mind when they're in a corporate environment teaching yoga versus in their studio classes?
It's a completely different world. You know, a lot of the aspects of yoga is the same, but the environment is so different. You know, the physical environment is so different. For a long time, I taught in a basement of a tech company, you know, that had cement floors. And no matter what I tried, no matter how many mats they had, low lunge hurt their knees, you know. So it was just having to adapt to the office environment is really big. There's LED lighting, so it's really bright. There's the AC blasting, so it's cold. You know, you don't have the warm and cozy candle lights and heated room and softwood floors.
Right.
So really have to modify the sequencing. And that actually helped me develop a desk yoga format, which we'll talk about later. But just really being mindful of the environment that you're in. And you might not always have a room. You might be in the middle of I taught in the middle of a kitchen once, you know, and people would walk through to throw away their lunch, you know.
Your space is
very different. There's also time constraints. So in addition to the environment, you have time constraints. We're usually in a studio setting, you have maybe 60 minutes or 90 minutes even to teach a class. A lot of the corporate classes are, you know, they could be 15 to 30 minutes or maybe 45 minutes if you're lucky, but, you know, rarely is it an hour class.
Right.
You don't have time for that anymore. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the legal and the practical considerations. You know, when you go to a studio, they have all the things that you need to sign. When you go into a company, they're going to ask you for your copy of insurance, your certifications. They're going to ask you for a W-9. They're going to ask you for all this paperwork that you need to provide them. Mm-hmm. So I actually have a teacher training and I give everyone the templates and I let them know, like, this is all the stuff that you're going to want. Just have it in a packet and ready when they ask for it, or just send it in advance.
Right.
So those are some. And then, oh, one last thing is actually wearing business casual clothes.
I was wondering about that. I really was. I was going to ask, like, especially when you're trying to get the job.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wear business casual clothing.
Even when you're teaching.
Especially when I'm teaching. Well, I only really teach the desk yoga format now.
Okay.
Which I would definitely recommend wearing business casual, because what happens is if you're wearing yoga pants and you go in to like recruit people to come take your class and they're wearing their business clothes and they don't have yoga pants, they're going to look at you and say, I can't practice. Like, I don't have the clothes, you know?
Yeah.
So just by showing up looking like them, you're letting them know, like, I'm the yoga teacher, we're going to practice here. And they will, it's one less obstacle for them to participate.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So when you say like business casual clothing, do you mean like not even like, you know, sweatpants, but like jeans or, you know, Jason and I call them like soft pants versus hard pants. Yeah. Ever since COVID, yeah. Like, oh my God, I got to take off my hard pants. And he's wearing like, you know, like an old pair of jeans. Cause yeah. We're just our loungy clothes. Can you wear like loungy clothes, like nice loungy clothes? Or are we talking more like pants and a button down?
I think, you know, it's so culture, the culture now is so lax, even in companies, that you can get away with, you know, Athleta has like soft pants, you know, as you would call them. So I think something like that would totally fly. Okay. I just don't think the like spandex yoga pants and like the crop top, like don't do that in the office environment, which I've had teachers do.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, it's not a hard, fast rule. I'm just giving you my experience and what is going to make it a lot easier for you long-term and get more people attending and long-term success. So
right.
It's not black and white, but
yeah,
we're business casual clothes.
And then, so in terms of sequencing, obviously, like you kind of mentioned, you know, the room is not going to have the same feel. You're not going to have, you know, the soft candlelight, the soft lighting. You're not going to have the intricate sound system and the warmth, like the heat necessarily that a lot of studios do. And then you're also not going to want to get people super sweaty and then going back to work. So how do you organize your sequencing, and what are kind of your objectives for your clients when you go into a corporate space?
I love this question. My objectives are actually focused on the industry that I'm going into and the primary functions of the industry that is required. So for example, I did a workshop for Harvard Business Review, and it was for executive leaders. And so I sat there and I had 15 minutes. And so I thought in advance, what's the primary function of an executive leader? Their, you know, main responsibility is to think, is to decide, you know, make decisions and to relate to other people. Mm-hmm. And so I put together a sequence that had that at the base of the, you know, thinking, relating, and making decisions. So I did a little bit of work just to, you know, clear their mind. I did a little bit of work to get them grounded. And I did a little bit of heart opening for, you know, in terms of relational aspect. So I think that's how I sequence them, especially if it's a special event or, you know, a starter series where you're just doing a few sessions. Mm-hmm. That's how I would think about, you know, sequencing the classes. If you have, you know, a shorter class, it's harder to sequence a 15, 20 minute class in a flow, you know, versus a 60 minute class. It's a lot more, you have more time to get people warmed up and to take them through this like arc of a sequence and then to wind them down. And so I think when you have less time, you have to be even more intentional about how you sequence the classes.
Right. You have to think more about, if I have this limited time, like, how can I get them to be, and I'm saying this in a broad way, but like doing yoga in that amount of time, whatever that means for you or for them.
Yeah. I've found actually there's a lot you can do in 15 and 20 minutes if you're intentional about it.
Right.
Weed out the fluff that's in between and just really focused.
Uh-huh.
Very clear directions, very clear transition, very clear, you know, postural sequencing, getting them into what poses and why. You know, you let them be there for a little bit, but I've found that you could do a lot in 20 minutes.
That's really cool. So when you did the executives, you said you had 15 minutes. Did you decide, because they were executives, that you would do the chair, seated chair option? Or did you? Yeah.
Yeah. They asked for that. Yeah. It's very rare now to get a request for flow format, like a vinyasa class.
Okay.
I mostly get requests for desk yoga.
Okay. So talk to me. So let's talk about that then. What does that look like? Are they all at their desks, or are they sitting in a room in chairs?
They're in a boardroom. Usually we'll get together and we'll host the class in a conference room or a boardroom area. And so I tried to remove all of the electronics that are on the table. There's iPads or teleconferencing units that are usually there. So I remove all of that with permission, of course. And then I'll dim the lights just so that, you know, they don't have that bright LED lighting in their face. And we'll start by sitting around at the table. You know, they're used to being in that room for brainstorming purposes or, you know, coming up with new ideas or making big decisions. So they're used to sitting in the chair. So I'll usually start for a few minutes in the chair, have them do some simple stretches, and then we'll get up and we'll move the chairs out of the way. And then we'll use the desk either as a reference point or for support. So, you know, a simple pose, like down dog at the desk. You plant your hands flat on the desk, you know, shoulder distance apart. You step your feet back so that you're creating an L shape with your body. And that's our desk yoga version of down dog.
Right.
It's actually really lovely because there's no pressure on the wrists. You know, the wrists are neutral. There's a lot of opening through the shoulders and the chest, but there's not that weight bearing that you have in down dog. And you could do it just standing at the edge of the table.
Right.
You know, there's poses that I've created and sequenced around for that specific setting, for that specific type of class.
That is so interesting, Miriam. Like we used to do yoga at Yoga Journal, and I was just like very traditional yoga. I mean, but that, again, that's a completely different kind of setting and environment. So I'm not familiar with this version at all, and it strikes me as so wise. So yeah, what are some of the other ways that you make your classes or your sequencing, more office adapted?
More office adapted. So I think some main things to think about when you're going into the office environment versus a yoga studio is, aside from the format, you know, just maybe changing up the format, is also the language that we use, like cueing and language. I think in the yoga world, we have a lot of cues and ways that we communicate that might not necessarily translate to, you know, a corporate setting.
Okay.
And so, you know, something I had a yoga teacher, I was doing an interview with them. They said, you know, imagine like a golden light going up the spine and out the crown chakra, you know, and it was sort of one of those like very elaborate yogic language. And well, we know what that means. You know, you would really lose your corporate audience quickly versus just saying, you know, like sit up at the edge of your seat, lengthen through your spine and imagine, you know, like an upward draft going up the spine, like steam rising, you know, something that they can relate to that has a, you know, an association, but it's tangible.
Yeah.
So the language and the cueing that we use, I actually just posted something on our blog post about, you know, alternatives, language and cueing alternatives. So the communication, the way that we speak is one thing that I think we would want to adapt. Again, the clothing that we wear, you know, business casual clothing, just so when they look at you, they know that they can also participate. You're one of them. You know, they feel like they can connect to you and you understand what they're going through and how you can support them. I think a good focus on desk-related issues or injuries can be very helpful. You know, maybe carpal tunnel or frozen shoulder or just lots of neck strain, shoulder strain, lower back strain. Right. You know, you could still have a really well-balanced sequence, but having a little bit more emphasis on the pains and the struggles that like desk, you know, workers suffer. That can be really helpful too. And the last thing I'll say is start and stop on time. You know, make sure, especially if you only have 20 minutes, definitely stop on time because people have meetings that they have to go to afterwards. And so if you are running late, you know, it's, I think it's a little bit more normal and traditional for yoga studio classes to kind of run over time. But if you make someone late to a meeting, they're not going to be able to trust to go back to your class the next time. It's really important to start and stop on time.
Absolutely. That is so true. It is so hard, as anybody can imagine, in any type of job, to fit a 20-minute break doing something totally different into your day.
Yeah.
So you need to feel it's respectful to the students to do that. If they're going to make the time to stop that, the craziness of their workday, to like devote that time to class and their own, and their well-being. Yeah. I think that that's so such a smart reminder. Your company is well established now, and I'm sure you have this kind of all locked and loaded, but for, you know, your average yoga teacher who mostly teaches in studios or does privates, who's thinking about going into a corporate environment, what are some of the benefits that they can talk about when they're trying to get the job, or, you know, or like, how do you kind of summarize that as a yoga teacher for a workplace setting? And also just like, what are your objectives when you do go in to teach people in offices?
Yeah. So just 2 days ago on Monday, I had an hour long, like, oral demonstration and presentation, second round interview with a government contract that I got accepted, you know, moved into the second round for. And it's a huge contract, right? It's for 13 different cities for on-site yoga in the Bay Area. It would be huge if I got it. But I bring that up because I got that contract, I got the proposal from someone that I had previously worked with. And I had previously worked with them from a client, you know, through a client that I had gotten from a different reference or referral. And that person worked at Twitter, which I worked at, and they referred me to somebody else. And so 80% of my business is word of mouth. It's just referral. So for yoga teachers that are interested in going, the best thing I could say is just be professional in going into that space from beginning to end through communications with them when you go in to meet them, even when the contract is over, like really being professional and graceful with the end of a contract, because those people leave their jobs and they go somewhere else and they'll want to bring you into their new job if they don't have, you know, wellness there. Mm-hmm. So just being really professional and really excellent at what you do, you know, like going to finding people that have done it and asking around, you know, there's lots of people that teach corporate yoga. So just asking a friend or someone else that has experience. But of course, if you don't have that experience yet and you're just trying to get started, you know, I think honestly, just starting to talk about it, you know, asking friends or family members. What I did a lot was I just announced it at the end of my classes. You know, mm-hmm. I taught at a gym, you know, close by that was close, you know, in Soma area. And I just announced it at the end of every class. And I actually got a couple of different clients that way. They're like, oh, I didn't know you went to the office. And I was like, yeah, you know, so that's an easy way. They already know you. They know your style, that you have rapport with them. So just announcing it at the end of the class, putting it in your newsletters or on your website or posting on social media. Those are the best ways. And of course, you know, I always have people coming through the website and through work. And so I usually reference out people that I've worked with in the past for clients that are out of my range.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So most people, since which makes sense, most of it is word of mouth referrals. So would you say most people are already bought into office yoga, you know, the first time you go into a class, or when you go in, do you feel like you have to lay out the objectives really clearly? Like, hi, I'm here to teach. Like, here are some things that we're going to focus on. And like, in other words, on a kind of macro level, like we talked a little bit about how the actual teaching is different, the format of the teaching. What about just the overall goals for your students in that setting versus your goals for your students in a studio setting?
I would absolutely lay out the objectives, and I do. And actually, Jason is phenomenal at this. So anyone here, that any of the listeners that have taken Jason's sequencing classes or any of his teacher trainings, he's so good at laying out sort of high level thinking, you know, and how to format your programming. And so I would do the same thing for my corporate clients. I would just do it in a desk yoga format where the focus is more desk related issues, but mm-hmm. definitely have an objective going in. Mm-hmm. The people going into your classes that are in a corporate setting are usually not the same people that are going into the studio setting. Mm-hmm. I've actually found that the yogis that practice with in my office environments, they're like busy moms that just don't have time to go to a studio. Mm-hmm. They have to pick up their kids after school, or, you know, they have to go home and prep dinners, and or parents, I shouldn't say moms, also dads, or they have aging parents that they're taking care of. Or they're just really, you know, they're shy and they're intimidated by the yoga studio setting. And so they'll show up to, you know, their office environment because it's easy and they want to get out of work for 20 minutes or 30 minutes. But I think being really clear about what they're going to get out of that session and the next few sessions or that month mm-hmm. is really important. So it keeps them coming back and they can measure their progress.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about, and I'm sure it varies, but how you structure your pricing or how you create packages for your clients?
Yeah. Yeah. This is like 12 years of experience that comes into pricing and packaging. And there's three components that I think we want to think about when it comes to putting your packages together. One is just going to be location, right? Are you in a big city or are you in a suburb? You know, obviously, if you're in a big city, cost of living is higher, your price rates and price points are going to be higher. The second thing you want to look at too is going to be the size of the company. Are they a really small mom and pop, like 10, 20, 50 person company, or are they a large enterprise company, you know, with like 10,000 plus people or even 1,000 plus people? And then the last point that you want to look at is going to be the duration of the agreement. Is this a one-time event or is this an annual contract, you know, or somewhere in between?
Mm-hmm.
So pricing for corporate classes usually is going to be in the range of like $100 to $350 a session, mm-hmm. right? And so it just depends on, are you in the suburbs or big city? Are you in, you know, is this a small company or big company? And then what's the length of the contract? So mm-hmm. somewhere in between that, that's how we find our pricing. Mm-hmm. And I usually work with the people that I train so we can figure out a system that works for them. Mm-hmm. And I share, you know, I'm really transparent about my pricing and what how I structure my contracts, just mm-hmm. so people get an idea. But, you know, the market rate is pretty standard based on those points.
Right, right. Do you ever have to do like trials at companies first, or do they ever do sort of feedback for you or surveys or anything like that? How do you know how you're doing?
Yeah, that's a good, I actually offer surveys. So with my long-term clients, I have a biannual survey. I do one in the summer and then one at the end of the year just mm-hmm. to get feedback and see how we're doing. I also meet with my client contacts once a month to do strategy, you know, just big wow. picture, like what are you guys going through?
Oh, that's that can,
yeah, it's really, I'm leaning into that a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And actually one really important thing I found during one of my strategy sessions is one of my clients had a dip randomly, like in May. And that's usually a pretty busy time. And I was like, what's going on? Like, what happened here? They were doing more on demand, but they weren't showing up to the live. Mm-hmm. And this was a law firm. And he told me, he said, actually, we lost two of our employees, like over the, you know, like a couple of weeks ago, like they died, they passed away and very young, like late 30s, early 40s. And it really had a ripple effect amongst the employees. So everybody was really feeling that.
Right.
And yeah. And so I was like, oh, okay. Right. And so, you know, I was really happy that he shared that with me and I gave it some time, but you know, we eventually did like a grief relief workshop and some work around that. I brought in someone that does bereavement. And so we were able to work with them in that regard. Right. So those were helpful, like having contact, regular contact with, you know, whoever's organizing the program, just so you have a pulse on what's going on for the organization and the employees. And then you can tailor your program to really meet their needs.
Yeah. I think that's so smart. I mean, even, you know, on a less like dramatic level, there's like sales cycles that companies go through where they get really busy or, you know, at Yoga Journal, we would have like, if we were prepping for a conference or... Yeah, I did often feel like for the yoga teachers, it must have been so hard for them to read the room. Like, why is everyone suddenly so irritable? Or why is everyone suddenly so relaxed? Or so, yeah, to be able to check, have someone there to check in with would be incredibly helpful for you as the teacher, and then also for the students, so that you're not going in like, thank goodness that person told you that, and you weren't going in like, we're going to do a joy practice today or whatever, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's not totally off base.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes total sense. Well, I feel like I could ask you so many more things, but we're coming up on an hour. So what have I missed? Is there anything else you want to share? And then I want you to talk a little bit about the training that you mentioned.
If you're a yoga teacher or just a yoga enthusiast, and this is interesting to you, I think there's a lot of opportunity in, you know, working in corporate wellness or in corporate yoga, office yoga. Right. You know, if you think about the amount of opportunities for, I did the research, for every one yoga studio in San Francisco, in any big city, for every one yoga studio, there are like 90,000 businesses. And just across the US, for every one yoga studio, there are 10,000 businesses. That's like on average. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So instead of, you know, having to fight for a time slot at your local yoga studio, there are so many opportunities to go into companies, and they need you. They mm-hmm. want you. They really, really appreciate the work. And mm-hmm. and I, as much as I can encourage us, you know, I feel like this is just starting to evolve. And so please go out there, you mm-hmm. know, if you're interested at all. And I'm hopefully can help demystify and make it less intimidating for you. It doesn't have to be, you know, I've made all of the mistakes. So reach out to me. I'm happy to talk to you and support.
Yeah.
To make it less intimidating. It doesn't have to be, you know.
Yeah. What's some of the more common positive feedback you get from employees that work with you? What are like, yeah, what are the touch points that really work for them in the yoga practice?
One employee told me, she's like, I don't think I would have survived the pandemic without this.
Wow. You know?
So yeah. There's some really big, you just don't know how the yoga lands for people. And it's similar in a studio. You just don't know what people are walking away with, and they usually don't share it with you. Mm. And honestly, if I didn't have those biannual surveys where I actually ask for feedback,
yeah,
I probably wouldn't hear as much.
Right.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know.
Yeah. And feedback is normal in the workplace. You know, they incorporate that. So I think it's normal for us to ask for it.
So that's a good thing to do. Okay. That's good to know. That's good to know. Okay. So I will put, you know, all the information for how to find out more about your work and your training in the show notes. And I just so, so appreciate this, Miriam. I learned so much, and I know so many others will too. And I'm glad you're out there doing this work.
Thank you so much for having me, Andrea. It's a huge honor.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for listening. As always, I will put links to everything mentioned in this episode at yogalandpodcast.com/episode323. Thanks for writing reviews and for sharing the podcast. It always means so much to receive them and to see you share things that make a difference in your life and in your practice. Okay, so until next week, enjoy your practice.